This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean County and Bloomington Normal, 88.3 in Pontiac, 97.1 in Lincoln, covering much of central Illinois. Our website is CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. You can also call us here at the station. Our number is 309-807-2427. Again, that's 309-807-2427. If you'd like to make a donation, as always, we can always use it. You're best to go to CatholicSpiritRadio.com and make it there, and you can find out a lot about us on that website and look at some of the programs, back programs and so forth that are on there. Remember, we're brought to you by you, so we depend on all of our listeners to keep us going. So anything you can do to help, we would greatly appreciate it. We're going to have a great show for you today. We're going to talk about miracles of the Eucharist. About 2 weeks ago, I think, we did talk about the Jewish roots of the Eucharist and how the real presence in the Eucharist was understood all the way from not only the very beginning of Christianity, but even going back further than that to its Jewish roots. So the real presence is something that we as Catholics are bound to believe in. And there is evidence that it's been one of the dogmas of the Church going all the way back to the time of Christ and actually, in fact, even before that. So we talked about that last week, and again, we're going to talk about some of the actual miracles that have happened concerning the Eucharist that do show that the real presence is not just symbolic, but the real presence is actually a true thing. And some of the miracles we'll talk about have been verified by a lot of scientific evidence and study, and we'll get into that shortly. But before we start, I'm going to ask my wife, Lynn, here if she has something she would like to contribute before we get going. And also, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on currently, especially talking about the big to-do in the Church that is going on right now over the Pope's motu proprio concerning the Latin Mass. So we will talk about that in the beginning ahead of time. So before we get going on that, Lynn, anything that you want to add to what I've said?
Yeah, I have a comment on this latest bulletin from the Vatican. It really hurts. I had, you know, I'm old enough to have gone through the changes with Vatican II when they turned the altars around, so to speak, and did away with the Latin Mass, so forth. It was really hard for us that had grown up with the Latin Mass because it's so, so beautiful. Well, they changed that, took that away from us. It took a long time for me to get used to this Mass now, and now they're going to bring it up again, bring the change up again. They want to get rid of, entirely do away with the Trinitine Mass, and the way those words are formed, the way the letter reads, they're going to actually make it so that a young priest will not be able to say the Mass unless he has permission directly from Rome. Now, what do you think the chances of that happening? Zero is right, John.
Well, the fact is that, you know, when they worded it as he has to have consultation with Rome. But I think, you know, just the idea, we were watching the World Over Live yesterday, and as Raymond DeRoyo and Robert Royal and one of the priests that was on there, I've forgotten his
name. Is that Murray?
Right. I'm not sure. But at any rate, we're talking about that. The thing is that in saying the Pope or the didn't say that they have to have permission, but they have to, Rome has to be consulted. The priest would have to report it to his bishop that he wanted to say the Latin Mass or the Tridentine Mass. The non-regular form of the Mass instead of the Novus Ordo. And then the bishop would have to consult with Rome. But the whole thing is Robert Royal and Raymond Arroyo said, it seems like it's there to discourage young priests from even doing it because it's like, well, you know, this is not, Rome doesn't really approve of this, and you sort of have to push through. You could probably get it done, but it might not be a good mark on your record as, you know, in the priesthood and so forth. And so it's like a discouragement for young priests doing this. And what's strange, Lynn, don't you think, is that everyone has this idea that somehow older people like ourselves are the ones that are, you know, going to the Latin Mass, or we're trying to bring back the past or go back to what we used to know before, you know, the Mass was changed. But that's not the case. Actually, if you take a look at the people, you know, that attend Latin Mass, most of them are younger. Most of them are young people or people
young
who are
families.
Young families, mothers and fathers with children and so forth. They want more than what they seem to be getting from the Novus Ordo Mass. And we're not here to criticize the Novus Ordo. But the fact is that one of the things that you mentioned turned around the altars, maybe a lot of our listeners out there don't understand exactly what you meant by that, but in the old Mass, the Latin Mass, the Tridentine Mass, and in times before that, actually, even in the earliest times, the priest led the congregation in worship, and so the whole church was, in effect, facing east. I mean, when you're in church and going to Mass, no matter which geographical direction that the church is facing, symbolically, it's always east. We're process, you know, we're in a procession marching to the east, to, you know, the coming of the new kingdom. And this is the direction in which we're going. And the priest was leading. So he would be with his back, you know, the audience would be, he would be facing the other way. He would be facing the altar, facing the east. He wouldn't be talking to us. And it's now known that during Vatican II, one of the cardinals there strongly wanted to appeal to, you know, he was an ecumenical, very involved in ecumenical efforts, and he wanted something that would appeal more to Protestantism, to try and, you know, bring Protestantism back. And the idea was, you know, that in Protestantism, the pastor, of course, faces the audience, have more of a preaching, you know, to an audience like you have in the Protestant churches. And that's a known thing. And I don't know a lot about this particular priest. I mean, I'm not trying to say the man was doing it in some kind of devious or evil way. But nevertheless, this was why it was pushed. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
At that time, there was a big push for ecumenicism. And, you know, so that all religions could speak to each other and so forth. And I have an understanding. And the thought was, the more the Mass was changed and our, you know, liturgy was changed, not to alienate people. And they had Protestant input into this decision to have the priest face the parish, the people. And there's supposed to be, I don't know if they intended to have give and take or what, but as a result of that, we've had some pretty spectacular shows, I should say, put on. Priests coming up the aisle. I just saw one online the other day on a skateboard, like a skateboard that moves itself. But he went up to the altar on that, singing I remember there was a stage where they had balloons and banners and people in the sacristy jumping around, dancing, so forth. That is not the sacredness of the Mass.
Exactly.
It's never intended to be that way.
I agree with that. It starts out in small ways. Like, for example, I can remember back in church when we were there and you know, in the old Latin Mass, there would never be any applause or anything like that in church like there is now. And I'm not saying that that by itself is somehow bad, but little things like that build up and they start leading to looser and looser rubrics and looser liturgy and so forth.
So, you know, what is the saying? As you worship, you pray, or as you pray, you worship.
Right. Lex orendi, lex credendi. As we pray, so shall we believe. You know, so that's exactly, and it's true. I mean, you'll believe in the same sense that you pray. If you pray seriously and you pray, you know, with style and with the decorum and seriousness and, you know, that kind of thing, drama and mystery and so forth incorporated into your prayers, you will believe along that line, and your belief will be richer and deeper and more serious and more set apart. And that's exactly what holy means, doesn't it, to be set apart?
Exactly.
And so do we really want to change Catholicism somehow or another to be like the world that we see around us is? Because if we take a look at our society today,
it's in chaos.
It is in chaos, and it needs structure. And we've gone, you know, too far in a lot of directions, in my opinion, at any rate. And people need, human nature needs and wants authority and structure, and the church provided that. And, of course, Catholic doctrine and dogma has not changed in all of the time for 2,000 years since the time of Christ, and it can't change. And we'll talk about that a little bit as we get into the miracles of the Eucharist. But the point is that this kind of structure provides an anchor, and it provides sort of a shelter in a chaotic world. And the world has always, you know, had some chaos. Our society seems to be going in 100 different directions and doesn't really know anymore exactly where it wants to go. And the church has always known exactly where it wants to go. And that's why dogma and doctrine are so important. And to keep it and not to change into 35,000 or 40,000 different denominations as Protestantism has devolved into. And it's one of the attractions, really, of the Catholic Church. And to somehow or another try to imitate the world doesn't seem to me that it's, any advantage.
There should be a separation between the world and the worship of God. There's always been a separation. That separation should be the sacredness. Sacred is for God. And worship, you know, is to God.
Exactly.
And the only thing we should worship is God. So then you live in this chaotic world on the outside, and if you pray in the sense of going to a circus, as some masses are, you know, what? How are you praying? How are you believing?
Then
how are you acting?
Your belief will follow your prayer. And if your prayer is sort of silly or not serious, then your belief will be sort of silly and not serious.
Which leads to the fact that 72% of those attending Mass, those that attend now, we have so many nons that don't. 72% of those that do attend Mass do not believe in the presence, the real presence of God in the Eucharist. Now, we do have poor catechesis. Nobody can deny that. This last generation has gotten a very poor catechetical teachings, and losing my thought here, my line of thought, but when you're not teaching the basic, what is more basic than that? What is more basic than Christ sitting down with the apostles and telling him, what I'm doing, I want you to share from now on in remembrance of me? And when he sat down and he gave thanks to God and offered the bread that he had before him up to the Father. And then he broke it and gave it to his disciples. He said, "This is my body." Period.
And he also said, "Unless you," and he said it literally, these are the literal words he used, "unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, there will be no life in you."
That's right.
And he meant, you know, eternal life, of course.
Right.
And that's, he meant what he said and said what he meant. And the church has believed that from the very beginning. And that actually goes back to the Jewish roots, because Christ was a Jew. And he was bringing back much of the Old Testament and much of the Jewish law. And he said, "I came to fulfill the law," not to abandon it. He was fulfilling it in a new and different way, you know, the new covenant, the new kingdom. But nevertheless, he was fulfilling it and not actually abandoning it, making it whole. And Catholics believe the same way in our dogma and doctrine. Our dogma and doctrine never changes. It can be understood more fully, and this is what Christ was doing. He was showing his disciples a greater understanding of what was going on, but what had always been believed from the very beginning. And he was taking that and not abandoning it. He was making it fuller.
It's, right. You know, just and like, in John 6:52, some of his followers, many were Jews, they then disputed among themselves, saying, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?"
Exactly.
So Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink of his blood, you will have no life in you."
Exactly.
And, you know, there's no disputing this, these words. This is what he said. This is what he meant. And you can't say he said, "We're just doing this to remember, just a commemoration of the sacrifice." No, no. This is what he said. I don't know how people can just say, "Oh, we're just remembering it." No, no.
No, it's not.
This is exactly what came out of his mouth. And if you want want to follow the gospel and the words, so forth, you can't make up your own meaning for it.
Okay, we're going to have to stop here and take a break, or we're going to come back and we'll get to the miracles of the Eucharist. But before we do, when we come back from the break, I'd like to talk just a little bit more and clear up some of the things that we're talking about before we go on. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
St. Patrick Church of Myrna and the Knights of Columbus Council 15175 invites you to be a hole sponsor for our annual golf outing on September 13th at Crestwick Country Club in Bloomington. It's a great way to establish new business relationships with men and women from throughout the Central Illinois region in a casual and fun atmosphere. In addition, you'll help the Knights of Columbus in support of Catholic education in our community. For more information, call Luke at 309-825-9720.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break. We're talking about the miracles of the Eucharist coming up. But we've been talking a little bit first about the Pope's, the papal motu proprio, and the controversy over the Latin Mass that has been going on in the church. And we're going to return to that subject and talk about it a little bit more before we get into the miracles of the Eucharist. Of course, the reason we're talking about the miracles of the Eucharist and basics of Catholic Christianity, especially the Latin Mass, is because our society is in turmoil today. There is more and more of an animus against Christianity in general, the Catholic Church in particular. And we as Catholics, I believe, and Lynn also believes, and Catholic Spirit Radio believes, that we need to know the basics of our faith and believe firmly in the dogmas and doctrines of the Church that have not changed from the time of Christ up until now. and hang on to those as an anchor in the coming storm, because our society, whether people out there realize it or not, is in a lot more turmoil than most people think. And that's why we talked about this subject a couple of weeks ago in the first place, and why we're following up a little bit more on it now. But what I want to point out is one of the reasons, Lynn, that the Pope gave for this move to, in fact, in my opinion, sort of eliminate the Latin Mass, is because he was saying it's causing divisiveness. But in my opinion, isn't it the other way around, that removing it causes more divisiveness than the Latin Mass has ever caused? I mean, it's important for us, isn't it, to retain all of our dogmas and doctrines as handed on from the time of Jesus Christ, and to retain those without change. We can, make them understood more fully. We can come to a greater understanding, and they can grow in that sense, but they don't really change. But on the other hand, we can have all different types of liturgies and rubrics in the church. We have the Eastern Church, for example, that's in communion with Catholicism, the various different liturgies.
Their form of liturgy.
Right, of the Eastern Church. And so we can have different liturgies, and yet we believe all the same things. In other words, our doctrines are all the same, and our dogmas are all the same, and our understanding of church history and biblical history, and also the interpretation of the Bible and so forth itself, those things are all the same. So as long as those things stay the same, and we all believe in those things as Catholics, and we're in communion with Rome on those things, there certainly isn't any division in the church. And if some people like to go to the Latin Mass because they feel that it's something that they get more out of in that way, there certainly doesn't seem to be anything wrong with it. And if others prefer the Novus Ordo Mass, well, then we have both. And it doesn't seem to me that it really divides the church. And we can have some parishes where a priest is willing or understands and is able to say the Mass in Latin and knows all of the rubrics and liturgy of it and wants to do that. It's a perfectly valid Mass. And why can't those people do this? And it doesn't seem to me that there is any. There may be some people who are somehow or another take the attitude that, well, I go to the Tridentine Mass, and so therefore I'm better than you. But I would assume that those people
are very few
and far between. Most of the people that go to the Tridentine Mass go because they get a special beauty and a feeling out of it, and they like to go. And they're young people with their families and their children. And it's a different kind of Mass. And what is wrong with that? Can you comment on that, Lynn?
Sure, I can. They're afraid. Rome is afraid that they're going to, so many young people are flocking to the more sacred Mass. It seems, to the more sacredness of the Trinitine Mass. They're just flocking there. And the church, with the the new Mass.
Yeah, there you go.
The church with the new Mass is losing parishioners and young people, and they are more flocking to the other. And the Pope is labeling the traditionalists as being very stubborn people. And he's afraid that they're going to maybe take over and run things their way. I don't know. There's a jealousy there that runs very deep. And like you said, why can't we have different rites of the church? We have them.
We already have them.
And we've got even the Episcopal rite of the church.
That's true. We have the Anglican, a lot of the Anglican songs, and a lot of the rubrics and so forth, from the Anglican Mass, the Anglicans who have converted to Catholicism are still allowed to retain. And so
they are, they have their own diocese, and they are part of the Roman Catholic Church.
Exactly. You could be a communion with Rome. The important thing is that we all agree on the dogma and the doctrines of the church as handed down by Jesus Christ from the very beginning of the church. And that's what holds us together. And it doesn't seem to me that the Tridentine Mass should be a divisive thing. And it's simply, let me comment on this. You know, you're talking about the Pope being afraid, but that I think that's putting your finger on it, and you know, this fear that somehow or another, a jealousy maybe or something, that people aren't going along with what Rome has decided should be the ordinary liturgy of the Church. But the thing is the Pope, when we watched this program on World Over Live the other day, it was the Pope that came out and said something about the people who go to the Tridentine Mass are somehow acting in some kind of being afraid or fear, or having a fear of change or a fear of the new Mass. But I mean, isn't that being a little bit, you know, the Pope or Rome acting as psychoanalysts or something like that? I mean, you can't go inside of somebody's mind and decide why they like the Latin Mass, that somehow they're afraid, because you can turn that around just as you did and say, well, maybe it's the Pope in Rome that's afraid. And then, of course, we could be wrong about that. We don't know. But the point is that when you start making all these psychoanalysis like that and deciding that you know why and how people are acting, it actually starts to boil down sometime into name-calling. And it seems to me among liberal, you know, the whole liberal philosophy and the liberal framework that, you know, the Western civilization has been living in for a long time, there is a lot of that anymore. If somehow or another a person disagrees with the direction of liberalism that it's going, or liberalism, some of the facets of it, or the principles of it themselves, and comments on it because of a disagreement, all of a sudden they're acting out of fear, or they're being divisive. But it's never the other way around. It's always, it seems like, it's the people who are wanting to maybe retain a particular form that they're used to and they like, are somehow or another afraid of change or afraid of the future. But it is never the other way around. When people make a change or something, that they're never accused under liberalism of being afraid of the past or afraid of tradition. But you could make the same accusation, couldn't you?
You could. I think you basically could say that they're afraid of schism within the church, that the traditionalists will just say, we've had enough of this, we're going this way, and there will be a break in the church.
And then it seems always that, there's this idea of there's sort of been a condemnation in the last, in more modern times. I can't put a finger on how many years this is, but in more modern times there has been a condemnation, you know, of authority. There's, clericalism, that there's too much clericalism in the church, and we have to get rid of that clericalism. We have to be pastoral. We have to be more loving. We have to be more open and more accepting and so forth. You're hearing that a lot from Pope in Rome, but it seems like
he's the one standing shaking his finger at everybody.
Exactly. It seems like it's only going one way. One minute, the Pope seems to be saying those kinds of things, along with a lot of cardinals that support him in the church, or a lot of bishops and so forth that are on that side. But on the other hand, it seems as if anything that goes in a different direction than these people want to go, all of a sudden, like you say, there's the finger shaking, and all of a sudden authority is being used and enacted against the people who disagree. So one minute it's if you're going, it's sort of like, if you're going my way, we can be pastoral and loving, and that's how everything should be. But if you're not going my way, then all of a sudden the authority is back in vogue again, and so which is it? So you see this sort of like a schizophrenia or something like that. One minute everything is, you know, we need to be kind and loving and accepting and so forth. And the next minute, all of a sudden, everybody better jump and get in place if they're not going along with the program. So, you know, this seems to me that
then
bouncing from one thing to another.
Pachamama, where does that fit in with the Holy Roman Catholic Church?
Yeah.
They're bringing that in, and that's right there in Rome, right under his nose, and he's attended it.
And the point is there's a perfect example. There are a lot of people who are averse to that and don't like it, but then the other side is saying, oh, well, you know, you people are too rigid. You people are too, you're afraid and so forth. We need to move along lines and make changes and reach out to other people and so forth. But it seems like it's always in one direction. But if somebody else said, well, how about the Latin Mass? That is something old and at the same time new, because we haven't had it for a long time and a lot of people are not familiar with it. But all of a sudden, it's the other side now that wants to put the brakes on, and the people that are wanting to make a change along that direction, which is really making a change back to something the church already believes in anyway and is perfectly valid. All of a sudden now, it's the other side that's digging in their heels and saying this shouldn't be done, it's divisive and so forth. You know, it's like I say, it just seems like it's always going in one direction, but never the other. And so, you know, two can play the same game. I mean, you know, I think people should start remembering to do a little less of the psychoanalyzing, and that what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. And that if a person can say that we are being pastoral and somehow or another trying to reach out to people who believe in Pachamama and so forth, and we're bringing that into the church, which, you know, shouldn't really be done, that it certainly isn't being divisive for people to want to, in effect, go back to an earlier form of Catholic liturgy, and especially when that liturgy is perfectly valid and completes every aspect of attending Mass and believing in everything that the Catholic Church teaches and being in perfect communion with it.
And why can't this be done gradually? Why has it be done right now, as of now? Immediately, the statement says, immediately.
Yeah, it does. And it makes me wonder. But the thing is that it's not going to be done immediately. I mean,
because it can't be.
Because it can't be. And there are going to be a lot of bishops in the United States especially that aren't going to be able to just jump in and change this immediately. They're going to have to take time to understand how this whole thing works and give people who are attending the Latin Mass or the Tridentine Mass, whatever you want to call it, time to make those adjustments. It can't be just done all at once. So why again, like you say, why was that? It could be that Rome somehow wants to just get it over with.
Get it out of the way.
But it's just not a good idea.
No, and it's not working that way, because there are bishops in the United States that immediately have said they'll make no changes in their diocese, and they have the power to do that. So we'll see where this ends up.
Exactly. At any rate, it was also pointed out in the program we watched it was done on a poor survey too, that the actual survey of that showed that this is the direction, you know, according to Rome, that they should go in this direction. The survey that showed that actually only reached about 30%, 20 or 30% of the bishops. And I don't see that it really included the laity. When did the laity have a chance? And when did the people who attend the Tridentine Mass have a chance to have their input into it? It doesn't seem to me at all that they did. So
no, that's called clericalism.
Yeah. At any rate.
One thing we should make clear, Bob and I do attend the Novus Ordo Mass.
Yeah, we do. And we go, you know, regularly to Novus Ordo. We've been to a few Latin Masses, not very many. You know, and took our kids just to show them what the Latin Mass is like. But
if they were closer, I'd probably go more.
Maybe we'd go more. But the point is that we certainly didn't feel divisive about it or have some kind of animus against the Novus Ordo Mass on account of the Latin Mass. So it isn't the problem, and you know, unless it's called into attention and made into a problem, I don't think it's a problem. And has been a problem for the church. So it's just, it's puzzling what's going on. One more thing, Lindy, I wanted to get this in, and even if we have to take up two of our segments here. Well, I've lost it. I had a point that I was going to make, and I can't think of it right now. I'll probably get it and come back to it. Is there anything more that you want to say?
Well, and we've got another thing to discuss sometime. I don't think we'll be... might bring it up now, but we don't have time to go into it. Why are some of the priests who speak the truth, preach the truth, being relieved of their duties and removed from the priesthood, while others who don't are elevated?
Yeah, I think
that
I know.
That is a whole new topic.
I think I know who you're talking about.
I'm talking about Father James Altman.
Father Altman, and then, of course, Father James Martin.
Yes.
Yeah, one seems to be preaching what you could include, in my opinion, as heresies, and it's perfectly okay for him to do that. Maybe I'm wrong on the heresy thing, but it sure seems to be at least bordering on some of the things he says about abortion and other things, and he can merrily go along his way. But Father Altman preaches nothing against any Catholic dogma, but actually stresses Catholic dogma even more strongly, and maybe makes a few strong statements that go a little bit too far in one direction, but they're certainly not heretical. They may be just a little bit upsetting or something like that, or a little bit rough, but just once in a while. And yet he gets censored, and Father James Martin can go along his merry way. Again, it seems like under what people call liberalism, at least, under the direction it's going, is that it goes in one direction. In other words, we're tolerant as long as you agree with us. You know, in other words, we can't tolerate intolerance means we can't tolerate anybody that doesn't agree with us. And it seems like that's the direction that it goes. And when I say liberal or conservative here, it's those are words that we use. It just means those people who seem to take a particular stand down one direction as opposed to people who take a particular stand down a different direction. So that when I say liberal and conservative, they're not really as accurate words as we could use to describe different groups of people. Perhaps in opposition to each other, but it seems like it goes in one direction. At any rate, we're going to have to stop here. We've used up another segment, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
You most likely are familiar with Fatima and Lourdes, but did you know that the Blessed Virgin also appeared in the United States in 1859? That apparition took place near Champion, a small town in the Door Peninsula of Wisconsin. Today, Champion is home to the National Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help. Join Catholic Spirit Radio the weekend of August 14th and 15th on its pilgrimage to this shrine. Our travels will also take us to the Basilica and National Shrine of Mary, Help of Christians, at Holy Hill, also in Wisconsin. This two-day bus trip departs from Wapella, Bloomington, and El Paso. The cost for the trip is $300 per person. Make plans to join this exciting pilgrimage by visiting CatholicSpiritRadio.com or calling Kathy at 309-828-6554 or Carolyn at 309-830-4164.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic. We're back from our break. We were here to talk about the Eucharistic miracles today, and we haven't gotten to it yet. We've been talking more about the to-do that is going on in the church over the Pope's motu proprio concerning the Latin Mass, the Tridentine Mass, and the controversy surrounding it, and we've pretty well talked about some of the pros and cons on that issue. I think my wife Lynn has something more she wants to say, and then we'll talk about Eucharistic miracles. And if we don't get everything in today, we can certainly get some in next week if we have to. So we'll go from there. Lynn?
Okay. What I wanted to say is, as far as the Diocese of Peoria, I haven't seen anything that's been published about how Monsignor Bishop Jenke and his co-adjutor bishop, what they have decided on this matter. I've heard nothing. I know that Springfield, Bishop Perpalki, has come out and said everything will be left as it is because it has caused no problems within his diocese. As Bishop Corleone of San Francisco and one from Texas, there are a few, they're speaking out. But these are the ones that spoke out very quickly. It's not a problem. We are not going to change anything.
Okay, and so long as you're saying that, I did remember back what I was going to say.
Right.
But at any rate, I remember sometime back the Pope saying, and you know, he wasn't saying it any detrimental way or anything. But at one time, he described himself as someone who, when he makes a decision, he goes forth with that decision. He doesn't look back. And he's often also said that, the idea for young people, he's advocated them to make a mess. You know, go ahead and make a mess. And, that stir things up and progress and move along, all of these kinds of things. But the fact is that look at the mess that is being made here. What he's handed, you were talking about the bishops, look at the problem. I mean, you haven't heard anything from our own diocese. But the fact is there must be a lot of bishops and everything that are in shock at how this has come about and how fast they are supposed to act. And, what are they to do? I mean, the Pope has thrown a mess into the hands of a lot of our bishops to try and handle. I mean, they've got people who enjoy the Latin Mass. These people are going to feel somehow or another as if, they're being accused of doing something wrong, that they're being divisive.
Thrown out of the church.
Yeah, they're being divisive. They're being told that they can't have the Latin Mass in a parish, even if a priest continues to do the Latin Mass. I mean, where are they supposed to have it, out in the street? I mean,
you can
see that
there was a statement. Well, within that statement was these masses were not to take place in the parish. So, like Bob says, where is it supposed to be, out in the street?
Exactly. And, this idea, never look back and make a mess. But this comes back sort of in my mind, and it's like, to a certain extent, this seems to be also a philosophy that, is along the what you could call liberal line, I guess. I don't know if, you can use that word, but that somehow or another just, do something, make a mess, and then if everything goes wrong and the mess gets scattered all over and it has to be cleaned up, just move on to something else and let somebody else clean it up. And so, it's left to, in effect, usually those people who are most traditional and most loyal. It's almost as if, and this is the point I was going to get at, is that the people who, are less likely to stay in the church, unless there's a change, and loosely called liberals who want all kinds of changes and loosening up of the church. And so if they don't get their way, there's a tendency for them to skate a heck of a lot quicker, and easier than traditionalists and people who go to the Latin Mass and people who are loyal to the doctrines of the church. So those people get treated, in effect, as the ones who have to clean up the messes and are expected to conform to all kinds of things that they don't agree with, because everybody knows, in effect, that they won't leave. And so the people who are less strongly, Catholic in the sense of being traditional and dogmatic, are getting, treated more favorably because they're more likely to leave. I mean, that's, I'm not saying that this is the exact state of things, but this is what crosses my mind and occurs to me, and it seems rather reasonable that this could be happening. And I think a lot of these things need to be looked into, talked about, and discussed, in a sane and a civil manner with each other, and we're not getting that done.
Absolutely not.
So, you know, there's...
I say, you know, if the Latin Mass were offered somewhere in this community, maybe once a month or once a week, I'd go. Oh. But it's not really being offered very widely as it is.
Exactly. It's you know, it isn't taking place all over the place. I mean...
You have to drive to LaSalle or... Yeah. Clairvaux or Springfield.
Yeah, consider, you know, that we're here in central Illinois, and there are, you know, some pretty good-sized cities. And there's Bloomington Normal, and there's Peoria, and there's Springfield, and so forth. And yet, you know, you go down to Champaign and Urbana and Decatur and so forth.
I just like the decorum. I like the... mystical part of what of the old mass.
But getting back to the point about, you know, how many places can you go to the Latin Mass? I know you can go up into LaSalle. You can go to Fairbury. They have the Latin Mass over there. Is there any place in Peoria that has it? I don't know. I'm not aware of.
Sometimes they do at the cathedral, but not very often.
Okay.
And I think in one of those monasteries or whatever over in that area.
And St. why?
John, the, I forget their names. The monks, they aren't monks. I don't know what they are. You know, if they're Franciscan or what over there.
And why is it being banned? In other words, a parish can't have, you know, even if the Latin, if someone does agree to continue to do the Latin Mass, they can't do it in a parish anymore. I mean, where are they going to do it? That's what I'd like to know.
Oh, the American Legion Hall.
If you know, is that at least as I understand it. And then also, getting back again to this idea that younger priests somehow or another, you know,
they aren't going to be taught.
They have to get special permission, and you know, they have to get permission from their bishop, you know, which was probably always the case. But then the bishop has to consult with Rome. Why would there be any request to consult with Rome? How would Rome know the competence or non-competence of a young priest able to do? I mean, I can understand why the church wants to be sure that if you do the Latin Mass, that any priest that does it understands it and can do all of the rubrics and can do all of the, you know, they do the liturgy and all of it properly. I can understand that. The church wants to make sure it's done competently, and that's a good thing. But how would Rome know who is able to do that? That should certainly be up to the local bishop. I mean, don't we have the whole idea of subsidiarity?
That's right. I feel sorry for the bishops. I think they're under tremendous pressure right now, and we really need to pray for them support what we can and what they do.
It's
got to be a shock to have this handed to you. It's not a little matter. And I am afraid that this will cause a schism.
But it is tough. And this parallels what's going on in secular society, that that there is, that so-called liberalism goes in one direction, and there's all of this idea, even in secular society, of tolerance. And then in the church, of course, the substitute for tolerance, I guess, is being pastoral and being accepting, you know, and ministering to people where they are and so forth. And you get the same kind of parallel in secular society, but it always seems to be going in one direction. And if you try to get it to be a two-way street, all of a sudden then it's different. That somehow if a person objects to going there somehow too rigid, or they have all kinds of internal fears, or they're being psychoanalyzed. But if it's the other way, the other side makes an objection for something staying the same, or even for something going in a direction different than they want, then it's like, you know, that the same thing. You people are doing that because you're really afraid of staying the way we are and so forth. I mean, it's always in one direction. And I think everybody understands out there what I mean. And I think this has got our whole nation, this whole kind of thinking, divided. And maybe we need to talk about philosophies. Maybe we need to talk about the fact that, you know, the whole concept of liberalism. The West has embraced liberalism for quite some time now, and it's just taken for granted that liberalism is good. But liberalism has lots of flaws. From the very beginning, it had some, and it can develop flaws. Any philosophy can be taken to extremes, and can develop all kinds of things that don't jive with human nature and the way people act and believe. Something can't accommodate everything. And I think there's this idea that liberalism somehow can accommodate everything. Also, I think it's not understood that any philosophy is ultimately taken on faith. Liberalism certainly is. One of the Mr. Liberal himself, you know, John Rawls, admitted that liberalism is taken on faith every bit as much as any particular religion is taken on faith. And anymore, it seems that a philosophy can turn into a religion. And it seems to me that liberalism is certainly a religion, to the extent that a lot of its principles are based on totally on faith. And there's a lot of liberalism and so forth that contradicts practical knowledge and even psychological knowledge. And knowledge that's been gained, you know, over time, the knowledge of experience. And that is the idea among a lot of liberals, that there's no such thing as human nature. And that doesn't seem to be any understanding of how human beings actually developed over time for thousands and thousands of years, that can somehow be abandoned without serious consequences. So a lot of these things need to be examined and talked about. And liberalism itself, sometimes it seems to be totalitarian, in the sense that anything that seems to threaten it in any way, it's denied or refused to be talked about or considered somehow an attack on it. And liberalism becomes very defensive along those lines.
Well, we have been warned that this was going to happen. In many ways, we've been warned from heaven, Our Lady of Quito, and she came in the 15th century and said what was going to happen, and it has. And we've had the popes in the last 100 years that have, Pope, was it the 11th, Pius the 11th, and the 10th, that had gotten it down precisely. This is what's going on, and this is what's going to result of it. And we need to not go down these lines, but go down these lines we have. Now we have to somehow figure it out. But stay with Jesus. He loves us, and he gave his life for us. This is his church, not the popes, not the bishops, not the priests. And anybody else that shakes his finger at you, it's Christ's church. You need to stick with Christ. Don't turn your back on Christ because of Judas.
That's exactly right. I mean, that is one thing we need to forget. It's not my church, and it's not your church, and it's not the, you know, the Pope's church, or it's not the bishop's church, and it's not the priest's church. And it is Christ's church. He founded it. And he founded it on solid principles that he gave to the disciples. And he promised that he would be with the church for all time. And the fact is that we need to stick, you know, with Jesus and what he taught and what he handed down. And that is our Catholic tradition. And tradition is more important. Actually, tradition comes before Scripture does. I mean, there was no Scripture in the sense of the New Testament, at least, and there really wasn't a solid understanding and agreement on Scripture, even among Judaism. So Scripture is something that needs to be interpreted, and it was Christ that gave the church the tools to do that interpreting along the lines and along the doctrines that he taught. And certainly the Latin Mass doesn't contradict any of the doctrines that he taught. And
it was practiced for 1,500 years.
Right, and we should all be one. And I agree with that. All of us should be one. We should have the same doctrine, the same faith, the same dogma. and beliefs that are absolutely necessary to believe in. But the way that we approach those beliefs, the way we carry out those beliefs, the liturgy and the rubrics, the public works by which we worship and carry out those beliefs can change and can be different, and they don't all have to be the same. And it seems to me it's far more divisive what's going on right now. Certainly, before anything like this, if there is a reason that somehow we should come together on one kind of mass rather than more than one in a church, there should have been much, much more discussion about it. The lay people should have been incorporated. Far more bishops should have been allowed to put their inputs on it. It isn't something that needs to be changed suddenly and overnight. And it is causing a mess. And the thing
is... he likes to live in a mess.
The thing is that it's one thing to be flippant about cause a mess and stir things up, and it's another thing to drive on to something else after you've caused the mess and let it be there for somebody else to pick up all the pieces and clean it up. So at any rate, we're going to have to stop here. We've
yes.
taken up three segments, and we didn't get to the miracles of the Eucharist. So stand by. We will get to some of those miracles. They're very interesting.
Next week. And absolutely, we'll, positively.
Absolutely,
next week.
Positively, we'll do it. And but we hope you've enjoyed the show along these lines anyway. We certainly got a lot of the things that we believe should be discussed more off our chests. And we're certainly asking all Catholics to continue to go to Mass, whether it's the Novus Ordo or the Latin Mass, and hopefully that this can be resolved. At any rate, St. Michael, the Archangel, defend us in battle.
Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil.
May God rebuke him,
we humbly pray.
And do thou, O Prince of the heavenly hosts, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.